I will try to take advantage of these 45 minutes to introduce a model for the analysis of side channel attacks that we uploaded a few months ago in the ePrint. There has been significant changes in this, the description of the model, after the chess reviews and reviews of different conferences. What I would like to do in this talk is in three parts. First, try to give a kind of intuitive view of why this kind of model could be useful, then give a more rigorous description of the model, and finally illustrate this with some practical applications. And basically what I would like to do is do something with the model that we cannot achieve without it. So let's start with the easy and intuitive part. I think it's the first presentation about side channel attacks, so I can briefly summarize what it is about. So in general, if we speak about cryptanalysis, we start in cryptography with black box cryptanalysis, in which the adversary can, in this example it's a block cipher, can only access the plain text and the ciphertext pairs. And so we imagine that there's a black box around the primitive, and in side channel attacks, we just remove the black box and assume that the adversary can access some additional physical leakages like timing information, power consumption, or electromagnetic radiation, or any kind of other health. And if I can summarize this state of the art in side channel attacks, we could generally say that these attacks are powerful but specific because we target one particular implementation rather than an algorithm in general. Still, they are generic because most devices can be targeted. So even if it's specific to any particular device, we don't know, at least I don't know any device for which you could say that it's not susceptible to side channel attacks in any way. They are usually hard to evaluate because we have many different circuit technologies and many different statistical distinguishers. And presently, they are hard to prevent because if you look at the state of the art, most of the time what we try to do is make the job of the adversary harder, but we don't have any single countermeasure for which we could say that it's sufficient to prevent side channel attacks completely. So this is a general context in which we have many open questions, and I would just like to illustrate this with two pretty simple ones. The first one is this one. Let's say we have a given implementation, the AES for example, and we monitor the leakages. And we have two adversaries, DPA and templates. And the question is just how can we compare these two adversaries? So of course, we have some tools for doing it, but do we have a really good evaluation methodology in order to allow fair comparisons between both of them? If you already dealt with side channel attacks, you know that the template guy is stronger. He will make a better use of the information available, but how much better is it? That's one question. And another example of simple question is, let's say we have two implementations and we monitor the leakages, and then the question, we are running the same cryptographic primitive, and the question is, how can we compare these two implementations of the same cryptographic primitive? And this means who is the guy that we have to put here in order to make a fair comparison between the primitives. So the first observation, or what we would like to underline in this work, is that it's really important to distinguish two things. On the one hand, you have the quality of one implementation, and I mean, for example, the amount of information that you obtain from this implementation. And on the other hand, you have the strength of the side channel adversary. So for the second observation, I will just like to compare now black box attacks like the linear cryptanalysis with side channel attacks. And if you think about it, what we do in linear cryptanalysis is you have this side channel distinguisher. He sends queries to an oracle. He gets answers. Like they are simply plain text ciphertext pairs in the case of linear cryptanalysis. And if you look at our side channel guy, he's basically doing the same thing. He sends some query to a target device. He gets the rest of the answers. And the only difference is that he has some more precise answers, because he not only has the plain text and ciphertext pairs, he can only have some information about, for example, the power consumption. So both attacks, if you look at them, model like this at least, they work in two steps. First, you query the target implementation in order to get some information, and then you try to exploit this information with a distinguisher. And both attacks basically yield two questions. The first question is, what is the amount of information that is provided by the adversarial queries? And the second question is, how successfully can you turn this information into a successful attack? So the second observation is that if in the context of black box attacks, we mainly care about security, and this security is mainly computational. So for this reason, usually we don't speak too much about information in the context of black box attacks. If you look at side channel attacks, the situation is different because the same cryptographic primitive implemented in two devices can give you two different amounts of information. So quantifying the information may be a relevant question, and in particular what we expect is that the information will allow you to discriminate different implementations. While the security metric, like success rate or security metric in general, allows to distinguish different adversaries. And so the intuitive conclusion of these two observations is what we would like, or what we expect from a formal model for the analysis of side channel attacks, is to separate these two questions. On the one hand, you have the implementations, and we will try to quantify the quality of an implementation with an information theoretic metric. And on the other hand, you have adversaries, and then we will try to quantify the adversaries with a security metric. And of course, intuitively, what would be really nice is to quantify these side channel attacks with respect to two axes. The first one is the information theoretic one, and the other one is the security one. So if you do that, we could make nice divisions into intuitive categories of attacks. That's, of course, just the expectation. So now I would like to go into more details of this work and try to give a precise description of the model. Just starting with motivations and objectives, what we would like to do is basically have a model allowing to understand the underlying mechanisms in physically observable cryptography, and importantly to evaluate, and by evaluate I mean analyze and compare actual implementation and adversaries. If possible, it would be great to have something to construct probably securely designs, of course, but that's not yet done. So outline, I will start with the background, and all this work is based upon the paper of Micali and Weiss in TCC 2004, entitled Physically Observable Cryptography. And in this paper, they basically describe a very general model for the analysis of side channel attacks, and because this model was general, and in particular they don't restrict the leakage function in any way, they only had very few positive results in the model. They mainly gave some intuitions about something that are possible in the black box world and not possible in the side channel one. So an open question, and that's basically what we try to do in this work, is to meaningfully restrict the model to realistic adversaries and leakage functions. Still, it's really interesting to go through that paper because for a number of reasons, for example, the informal axioms that they use to model side channel attacks are really close to at least the intuition that I got from physically observable cryptography. And they have these five axioms. The first one is computation and only computation leaks information. This is probably the most disputable one because what does this mean is just that somewhere in a device you can store some secret securely. As long as you don't access the memory, as long as you don't use this secret in any kind of computation, then it's safe. And of course, we know that if you take the example of RAM memories, you always need some little amount of energy to refresh the value, so it's not formally true. But if you look at practical attacks, most of the time we take advantage of computations. So this is the first point. And then the same computation leaks differently on different computers. That's pretty obvious. If you take a smart card and an FPGA, they will give you different kinds of information about the computation that you are doing inside. The information leakage depends on the chosen measurements, and every measurement possibly introduces some randomness. That's straightforward as well. The information leakage is local, and this means that the maximum amount of information that you get from a device, if you repeat a computation with exactly the same inputs, it's always the same. And there's no contradiction with this one. In fact, if you perform twice the same measurement, you have, because of randomness, two different leakage traces. But on the other hand, the maximum amount of information, and maximum is the important word, only depends on the internal configuration of something digital, and so this is always the same. If you repeat the same computation with same inputs. And finally, all the information bit can be computed efficiently. Okay. And then next to the axioms, they define two things to model the physical reality. They start with the black box world, and in the black box world you have abstract computers or Turing machines, and they define the abstract computer as a combination of smaller virtual memory Turing machines, alpha i's. So this is only, of course, the black box. And in order to model the physical reality, they combine every virtual memory Turing machine with what they denote as a leakage function. And the leakage function is a function of three inputs: the computer's internal configuration, the specification of the measurement, and a random string in order to model the fact that you have some randomness in the measurements. And in fact, that's all they need to describe the whole physical reality, which is a pretty good abstraction. At least we did not find any problems with this model. So of course, if you look at this, side-channel people don't frequently speak about Turing machines and virtual memory Turing machines, so we wanted to translate this into a vocabulary closer to ours. So we can define a target circuits like this one. This looks a bit more like hardware circuits, in which we have signals. Sigma is the set of all these binary signals talking to some wires in the circuit. We have operations. We have the big O operations that we denote as the oracles, meaning these are the ones that you can query in the black box model. For example, omega could be a block cipher. And of course, in practice, it's implemented as a combination of different simpler or elementary operations. These are the small ones. We will care about the leakage function. Leakage function could depend on the signals or operation, basically the whole computer's internal configuration. We will not care about fault insertion functions and probing functions, but this is the rest, of course, of the physical reality. There's room for further works, of course. And with respect to Michaeli and Raisin, oracles and operations can simply be translated into abstract computers and virtual memory Turing machines. Signals are the VTM's inputs and outputs. That's easy. Then we could say that abstract computers are cryptographic primitives, like the AES ring that could be a cryptographic primitive, and that physical computers are what we usually denote as implementations, so it's closer to what we say. And of course, implementation in practice, they may differ either by their leakage function, like the smart card and FPGAs would have different leakage functions, or by their division into elementary operation. You can take one architecture of Rindad and decide to have it completely unrolled with pipeline, or have a loop architecture, or any kind of architecture would give you different implementations. Okay, even more practical, we can take the example of a block cipher and look at how it would fit to this model. This is a simple block cipher with usual components, XOR for the key addition, a layer of substitution boxes, and a linear diffusion layer. And we could decide that the block cipher, omega, is a combination of these elementary operations, namely the rounds and the key rounds, or we could decide that the block cipher is a combination of XOR, substitution boxes, and diffusion layer, and we could even decide that this block cipher is a combination of logic gates. In fact, we don't really care. This is somehow a description of the granularity of the adversary, but at the end, we don't need to specify this practically for the security evaluations later on. Let's see if this is how the model would relate to physical reality. Okay, then a final point, simpler one. We have to define, of course, if we want to make security evaluation an adversarial context. Like in general, the adversary can be non-adaptive or adaptive with chosen plain text or chosen ciphertext, non-plain text, non-ciphertext. That's easy. And we have to define a strategy. That's particularly more important. The hard strategy would be, let's say we have a side-channel attack, and the result of the side-channel attack is a list of key candidates. The hard strategy would be, given this list of key candidates, we select only the best classified key. And we say that the attack is successful if the best classified key is the correct key. or we can consider a soft strategy in which we keep a list of 5 or 6 or 7 key candidates, and we say that the attack is successful as soon as the correct key candidate is in this list of key candidates. So these are two different possibilities. And in fact, up to now, I just described the model of Michaelian weighting and nothing about what we need to get more practical results. So from now, I will describe what we need to introduce to get closer to the physical reality. And the first thing that we need is what I denote as leakage predictions and a definition of the adversary. For this purpose, I decided just to describe a generic side channel attack as follows. So from the whole following model, but I think it's generally true, we consider three different phases. The first one is prediction, second one measurement, and third one comparison. And basically what the adversary does is the following. First, according to some kind of prediction function, this, for example, it could be the Hamming wave leakage function. According to this prediction function, he predicts a part of the leakage in the device. And of course, this part of the leakage is key dependent. Then second phase, the adversary measures the actual leakages from the real device. And third step, the adversary compares the key dependent prediction and the actual leakages from the device. And the attack will be considered as successful if the best comparisons occurs for the correct key candidate. So this is, of course, this last step can be done with really known as the distinguisher. And if you look at these three steps, what we see is that what is defined by Michaelian weighting is basically the second step. So the measurement, the output of the actual, the real device, is what is given by and what is modeled by the leakage function as defined by Michaelian weighting. But on the other hand, they do not define anything called what I will denote as a prediction function, and they do not care about the actual statistical distinguisher that we use in the attacks. So these are the two things that I would like to introduce. And I will stay pretty general in these descriptions. For leakage predictions, we just took this from the practical applications, but we could have two different kinds of leakage functions. The basic one that we use in DPA is univariate, which means that, for example, let's say this is the leakage trace for the key addition substitution box and diffusion layer. We could try to predict only one point, for example, the maximum values in these leakage traces. And this point could be, for example, in practice, it's frequently the case, related to the Hamming weight or Hamming distance. If you do that, you have a univariate leakage prediction, and it's perfectly fine. You can perform a side channel attack like DPA based on this. But of course, you also see that you only use one point of the curve per operation or per curve cycle. So of course, it's a suboptimal information extraction. And something much more powerful would be to build a multivariate leakage prediction function, what we denote in practice as template attacks. And in this case, what we try to do is have some information about the correlation between the different time instances and try to take advantage of all the available information in the leakage traces. So this is for the leakage prediction functions, and I will frequently refer to univariate one and Hamming weight one in the following, but this could be anything like template attacks. And from the adversarial point of view, the only important point is to know what the adversary did in order to obtain this leakage prediction. The simplest way is to have a non-profile leakage function, and this just means that the adversary uses a priori knowledge about the device. So if you use, for example, for CMOS device, the Hamming weight leakage function, you don't need to have access to the device to know this leakage model, leakage prediction function, so it's non-profiled. But of course, you can also try to improve your knowledge or your prediction function by making some statistical evaluation of the noise within the device. This is what we denote as device profile. And finally, you can also try to build one as good as possible probability density function for each key candidate. And this would be to make a device or a key profile prediction function. So this is just basically a classification of the adversary. This one is the least powerful, and this one is the most powerful. And from this, we can define an adversary in a certain adversarial context C against this implementation, meaning the primitive and the leakage function, with time complexity tau and Q queries to the target device, as a combination of two things, the prediction function that I just defined, and what I will denote as the side channel distinguisher. And this is typically DPA, correlation coefficient, or Bayesian classification. So that's the first thing that we added to Michele and Raisin, it's this idea of prediction function and statistical distinguisher, or side channel distinguisher. The second thing that we have to do, like usually in cryptography, is to add some computational restrictions. And we mainly use this one. If you look in practice, or what we believe, our assumption is that most of present side channel attacks are divide and conquer attacks in which you try to recover parts of the key independently. And for this purpose, what you do is this idea of key-dependent predictions. So for these key-dependent predictions to be useful, it's necessary that the size of the key set that you try to identify is tractable. So for this purpose, we define the size of the key guess, G. And this has to be not too big. Typically, if you try to predict the output of one substitution box in Rendell, G will be 2 to the 8. And it's really easy to store 2 to the 8 predictions for the leakages. We can go further, but it's in practice, for example, it cannot be 2 to the 64. And then we still have time complexity and data complexity, tau and q. And from this, we can give a formal definition of security. And we started from the simplest thing, which is basically side channel key recovery. So it's just the following experiment. You have a random key, and the other one is a key that is given by the side channel distinguisher. The key recovery advantage is the probability that this experiment is successful. So it's basically the probability that the correct key candidate is the best classified ones. And the key recovery advantage of the implementation is the maximum over all the adversaries of this previous function. So this is pretty intuitive, and we started from the simplest possible definition of security for evaluation purposes. And then, of course, the main question that we had from the beginning is what can we use to evaluate these side channel adversaries and implementations properly? And this is what we denote as the evaluation criteria. And well, in practice, it works as follows. We imagine a physical world in which we have a target implementation embedding a secret key SG. The adversary gets some leakages that are modeled by the leakage function, and then we go through the evaluation side, and we would like to evaluate properly the amount of information of this or the success rate of the adversary at this point. So we have, again, two questions to face. The first one is, what is the amount of information provided by a given leakage function? And the second question is, how successfully can an adversary turn this information into a successful attack? So we need a few more definitions. L is basically a random variable for the leakage, so the observations generated by the real device. P are the adversary's predictions. And C, as already said, is the distinguisher, or side channel distinguisher, used to compare the actual leakages and the physical observations and the adversary's predictions. And well, the first metric that we use for security is pretty intuitive. It's just the success rate of the adversary. So we have defined side channel key recovery, and the security metric is just the probability that this side channel key recovery is successful. We have a formal definition here, but it's much easier to give an example. Let's say we consider a Bayesian classifier, and these are different experiments. We have four key candidates, and the correct one, the one that is hidden in the device, is this one. For the first experiment, we see that the correct key is the best classified one, so the attack is successful. For the second one, we have three equally likely keys, so probability of success is 1/3. In this observation, we see that the correct key is not the best classified one, so we lose, probability is 0. And here we win again, so probability 1. And from this, if you average, you can just give or find the success rate. So that's just the intuitive definition of a success rate. The second metric that we use to quantify the information, in fact, is just mutual information, and so Shannon entropy. And the only thing is that we can, what we define an entropy matrix, to always have the information between the correct key candidates and the wrong key candidates in order to 1 to check if you have some candidates that are more correlated with the correct one or not. But in general, what we have here is just the definition, the classical definition of ritual information. So again, if you have an example, you can have here the average of the negative logarithm of the conditional probabilities. And the only expectation, this is the leakage values. What we see in general and what we expect from this information matrix is that if the information is maximum on the correct key candidate, then at the end, by increasing the number of measurements, the attack will be successful. So I'm not sure this is the important part. The reason why we chose mutual information for evaluating side channel attacks is the following, is that it allows to define a sound leakage function as a leakage function for which the maximum leakage always occurs for the correct key candidate. And this is the reason of the negative logarithm in this definition, because the sum of all the negative logarithm is maximum. It also means that the product of all the probabilities, conditional probabilities for the correct key, given the leakages, will be maximum for the correct key. And at the end, if you have an adversary with unlimited queries, it should recover the correct key candidate. So basically, a sound leakage function is a leakage function for which, if you have no limitations in terms of queries, at the end you will be successful. So intuitively, there's enough information in these general observations. And if you combine this, and I completely agree that at this point you have to trust me, I think that the security metric is somehow straightforward, the information theoretic metric is not, and this could be discussed. But if this is working fine and if the metrics are good, the expectation is that we can have these nice plots about the different side channel adversaries and leakage functions. And then, of course, from this we can build an evaluation methodology, which is also interesting for side channel attacks. What we have to do if we want to evaluate a side channel adversary is the following. First, to define the implementation, meaning the abstract computer and leakage function. And this could be just simply to have one practical smart card. Like if you have a practical circuit, this is an implementation as well. It's not theoretical at all, in fact. Then you define the target, meaning the part of the secret key that you try to identify, and G is the size of the key guess. Once you have defined an implementation, you don't need anything else to evaluate the information. And this is the reason why we say that information can be used to discriminate different implementations, because it does not depend on the adversary. And then if you want to evaluate the security against one particular adversary, you always have to define the adversary, meaning define the context, strategy, the distinguisher, and the prediction function. And once this is done, you can evaluate the success rate of the adversary. So this is globally the methodology that we suggest for the evaluation of side channel attacks, which is for certain attacks completely straightforward. Certain statistical tools will give you exactly the same intuitions, but in certain particular contexts, we can find new observations from this methodology. Exemplary applications, they are basically the two questions that I asked at the beginning of this talk. So the security metric can be used, we hope that it can be used to compare different adversaries, and the information theoretic metrics can be used to compare different implementations. And finally, one word about side channel attack trade-offs. The first one is flexibility versus efficiency. So if you look at the different distinguishers, we all know that DPA is less efficient than correlation, less efficient than templates. And of course, if you just look at the efficiency of the information extraction, it seems that you always have to use templates to be the best adversary. But a better information extraction not only means that you are more efficient, it sometimes also involves different adversarial context. And for example, if you take DPA, DPA can be applied to a lot of different devices without any kind of adaptation. If you take templates, you have to profile the leakage prediction function, so this is much less flexible. So sometimes you have no choice, you have to use DPA. That's one trade-off, and the other trade-off is information versus computation, meaning that you can always choose between the hard strategy, in which you say that the attack is successful if the best classified key is the correct one, and then once the attack is successful, you're done, you don't have to do anything else. Or you can choose a soft strategy in which at the end you get a list of candidates And if you have some computational power, you can trade the information for more computation, and by just testing the remaining candidates, you can get a successful attack as well. So, conclusion of this model, what we try to do is to introduce the specializations of the model of Mikaly to the model of Mikaly and Racine that are necessary for the evaluation of practical side-channel attacks. Basically, we have lots of open problems upon which a number of funds have been already managed somehow. So, but what we need is more analysis of practical cases, design of probably secure implementations, or looking for optimal leakage prediction functions and distinctions. And what I would like to do now, so this is basically the description of the model, and don't have too much time, but I would like to give one application of this model and try to show one example in which we do something with the model and with the matrix, so try to justify the previous matrix with this application, and basically try to do something with the model that we cannot do without it, so motivations illustrate the relevance of what I explained before. And well, that's the main objective of this paper that was published at CHESS, derive practical design criteria from the theoretical framework that you cannot reach without the theoretical framework and without the different metrics. And somehow this paper is one justification of the selection of the security metric and the information theoretic metric. So I'll skip what you know already. And well, this is the specification of our example. We will target a block cipher. So we have plain text, cipher text, a secret key stored inside it, and we just look at the beginning of the first round. So you have the key addition and the substitution box. We consider the Hamming weight leakage function, possibly affected by some random noise, Gaussian noise, for modeling the measurements. We consider a non-adaptive and non-plain text adversary, and we consider the hard strategy, which I will really explain. And the first question that I wanted to answer is, what happens if you can only perform one query to the target device? So you have the device, and you can randomly choose one plain text and try to recover some information, or try to target this device with one single measurement. And consider the context of, for example, a microcontroller with an 8-bit database in which the whole value of the substitution box will appear on the bus, and you will get the Hamming weight of this. So basically what we consider is the leakage function after one single query for a secret key that is SJ, and this leakage is the Hamming weight of the Y value plus some Gaussian noise. This is the leakage function. This is the model of the leakage given by Mikaly and Racine. And then, I'm not going into the details, but we can just apply the definitions of the security metric and of the information theoretic metric. Some rules are a bit complex, but MATLAB does it all for you, so that's fine. And here you get the results. So what we did is just to plot the security and the information theoretic metric in function of the signal-to-noise ratio. And for example, in terms of security, we see that if we have low Gaussian measurement noise, the success rate is 9 over 256. That is basically the success rate that you compute with the binomial formula. So it's just, but it's easy. You go over all the possible Hamming weights between 0 and n. It's n plus h over 2 to the n. And this is just because this is a simple part. So this is basically the a posteriori probability of success given the Hamming weight if you assume that the plain text is distributed randomly. And then if you increase the noise, you just find out that at the end you have very little information and very little success rate, and the best that you can hope if you have a lot of noise in the measurements is that the success rate is 1 over 256, which is basically what we would have as a success rate without any kind of side-channel measurements. So this is high measurement noise. And of course, you look at this in practice, we will never stop after one single query because 9 over 256 is not a sufficient success rate. So the idea of site-enabled attacks is to increase the number of queries so that you get higher success rate. And this is done in the paper. You get exactly the same intuitions, similar curves, like in function of the signal to noise ratio. The only difference is that it's slightly more difficult to compute because now you have to take into account the fact that it's dependent on the block cipher components because you have a number of candidates for the Y values. If you have only one set, okay, it gives a number of candidates for the key values of the same size, but when you have two queries, what you have to determine is the size of this intersection between the two sets, and this depends on the functions that have been used to invert. But in general, what we get for practical S-boxes and for random S-boxes, it's exactly the same intuition. So again, at this point, it's not clear at all why two metrics are necessary, because if you look at this, this is security metric, this is information, and we exactly get the same intuition. So it seems that we don't need two metrics at this point. And what we wanted to do is to find a context and a meaningful context in practice in which these two metrics do not agree. For this purpose, we decided to investigate masked implementations. I guess most of you know how it works, but the idea of masked implementation is before applying the algorithm, you start by XORing the plain text with a random value, then you go through the S-box, and of course you need the second S-box S prime, so that at the end, after the application of the algorithm, this value XOR this value gives you the original secret state Y. And then from this we can define a secret state sigma that is basically the output of the unmasked S-box. And if we do that, we can again define the leakage. So this random variable has the Hamming weight of sigma XOR Q, it's this one, plus the Hamming weight of Q, it's this one, plus some random noise for the measurement. And well, this is a well-known controversial. What we wanted to do is to compare this with something much simpler, that is algorithmic noise addition, in which what we do is just we have the original computation and we also have a random noise, a random value that produces some as well. So the leakage now is Hamming weight of Y, the original value, plus Hamming weight of the random value, plus some Gaussian bands. And the question is to compare these two implementations, the masked one and the one with algorithmic noise. Intuitively, the question is, which one is more efficient? Of course, it seems that this one is much simpler, so it should provide less security. And what I would like to show you is that it's not true. It really depends on the context. And this can only be found with the information theoretic metric. So what we need to do for this is first, compute the probability density functions of the masked implementation and for the noise addition implementation. What we do is this is the PDF of the leakage given that the secret state is 0, 1, 2, 3, or 4 for the masked implementation. And these are the same PDFs for the algorithmic noise addition. So again, we can use the same definitions and from this definition get these pictures. This is an example with 8-bit values and a second-order masking scheme. And what we see is that this time, security and information do not agree. If you look at security, security would tell you that the red curve, so the noise addition, gives you a higher success rate than the mask implementation. And if you look at information, information would tell you that the mask information, at least for high success rate, gives you much more information than noise addition. So this means that if you trust information, mask implementation are easier to attack. If you trust security, noise addition is easier to attack. So the first thing that we wanted to do is try to find an intuitive meaning for the information, because security is straightforward, but information was less obvious to us. So we can, for this purpose, look at the PDFs for low measurement noise. These are the PDFs for two masked values and for two noise addition values, and what we see is that definitely you have more overlap for noise addition than for masking. And it's kind of straightforward that you will have more information in this case, so it should be easier to attack the masked implementation for low measurement noise. if you have high measurement noise, the situation is different because all these Gaussians kind of mix together and you have this mixture of Gaussian. And what we see now is that you have much less overlap for the mask implementation than for noise addition. So it seems that this time you have more information in here. This is basically the impression that we have from the information theoretic metric. So the question is basically who said the truth? And for finding out what is the good metric for discriminating these two implementations, we try to increase the number of queries. And what we see is that definitely for high SNRs, if you increase the number of queries, it's much easier to target the mask implementation than the noise addition. Even though after one single query, you had the opposite conclusion. So what we had is basically an adversary who had more information in the context of masking than in the context of noise addition, but had not enough power, not enough queries to see it clearly. And when you increase the number of queries, you clearly have the intuition given by the information. So this somehow shows that the IT metric discriminates the implementation. It's not yet shown that it's really the nice metric or the good metric to evaluate information. So and of course, security metric still discriminates the adversaries. And finally, what we wanted to do is try to show what we can achieve with these metrics and what we cannot achieve without them. And basically, it's a practical design criteria. So if you look at this picture, what we know is that we have these two curves for the information, one for the noise addition, one for the masking. At some point, you have an intersection between these two curves. If the information theoretic metric is good, is the right metric to compare these two implementations, then of course you should have less security on the right and more security on the left for one implementation. So what we do is go just right of the noise threshold and look at the result, and what we see in this context is that indeed noise addition is then better than masking. And then we went just left to the noise threshold, and then we found the opposite, is that masking is better than noise addition. So somehow the information theoretic metric allows you to precisely find this point, this intersection between the two curves for which one implementation is better than the other one. And well, that's an example that for us shows that at least in this example, these two metrics are meaningful. And well, that's it. Also really too long, so hopefully this work confirms, at least with one example, the relevance of using combined metrics for side-channel security. It also shows the importance of considering two things. On the one hand, the quality of the adversary, and on the other hand, the quality of the implementations. I had no time to discuss this, but it also really shows the limitations of higher order masking schemes, because if you look at the amount of information that you get for second order masking and third order masking, you see that it's absolutely not useful to increase the order. A good idea, a much better idea, is to use second order masking and add a lot of noise. And it's of course also much more efficient. And well, these are the other things that we would like to do with the model, comparing different attacks, different implementations. In particular for certain logic styles for which we don't have nice evaluation criteria. If possible, design provably secure primitives, and this shows two directions, one based on security, the other one based on information, and that's it. And for those who are interested, we summarized a lot of this work and the different papers that are already uploaded on this webpage.